Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. Today, I have a great guest on. We've done just a little bit of talking beforehand. I'm very interested in bringing her on. Her name is Kathleen O'Keefe. And the reason why I'm having her on the show today is because not only has she survived cancer once, but she has survived it twice. And with her insight and the knowledge that she's gained from it, I think it's really important that other people out there pick up on the same information and kind of know some of the facts. So, Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome. So let's talk about you, Kathleen. I did a little research. I mean, I get tons of emails sent to me every day about different forms of cancer cures and the hidden facts and all that. So first, let's talk to you about your story, what happened to you, and what made you keep pursuing it.
Well, Nancy, I survived breast cancer twice, and I survived by using something many in the medical field do not even acknowledge as being real. I used my innate intuition, my female intuition, and prophetic dreams, and they saved my life. I used my intuition and dreams to self-advocate a course of cancer treatment that was often against the advice of my doctors. And I also used it in my healing process. Now, I want to point out, Nancy, that I always worked with my doctors, but I never forgot to self-advocate and make the final decisions, decisions that I could not only live with, but die with. I would rather die from my own choices that I felt were right than to die from somebody else's choices that I always felt were wrong. So I hope my story can help others make better decisions also.
I'm sure it will. So about how long ago was the first diagnosis made?
The first one was in 1999. I had gone for my normal mammogram, and it was actually in 1998 that I found it. It took me a few months to get the doctors to give me the operation that I wanted. But in 1998, I had gone for my mammograms and my blood tests, my physicals, you know, the everything that you go through once a year for them to tell you that you're healthy. And my mammogram, the little yellow paper you get in the mail that is your mammogram reading, it said, you know, there was negative for any breast cancer. And my blood test came back as being really healthy. The physical exam that I had with my doctor said, you know, I was healthy. And then I started having these really bizarre dreams. And in the dreams, it was almost like I was dreaming, and then my dream would stop, just like somebody hit, pause on the TV. Mm-hmm. And a window or a door would open into my dream, much like one opens on your computer, and just as difficult to close. It's like a pop-up in my dream. And a guide walked through and said, come with me, and took me through this pop-up where there were other guides. And my guides are dressed like Franciscan monks, you know, the mm-hmm. kind of Catholic monks. They don't have wings. They don't have halos. They don't glow. They look kind of plain. They have on these robes that look like, you know, burlap sacks with a hood on them, and rope belts, and they wear sandals. And they were standing around, and they said, you need to go back to your doctor, and you need to tell him that you want a exploratory surgery. And I remember saying to them in the dream, I've already been to them three times with your other dreams when you came in and told me to go back. I went back. And they're telling me that I'm healthy. What else can I do? I don't know what else to do. So you need to do something if you want to help me, because I'm up against a rock and a hard spot. These doctors are not listening to me. So one of the guides reached into his pocket, and he pulled out a feather. I mean, just a little ratty, like, feather that you pull out of a pillow. It was not some great, beautiful, long, flowing feather. No, no. It was just this little ratty thing. And he handed it to me, and he said, if you go back tomorrow without an appointment and you tell your doctor that you want exploratory surgery on this spot right here, and he took my hand and he put it on the spot, and he said, do you feel that right there? And I said, yes. He said, have your doctor feel again. And I'd already had my doctor feel twice because the guides had told me where to feel. And my doctor was saying, Kathy, I'm not feeling anything. You know, you're very young. You have fibrotic tumors in your breast. It's nothing to worry about. You're too young for cancer, and breast cancer doesn't run in your family. So my guide said to me, if you go back tomorrow, and when he says no, if you imagine this feather in your hand, and you use that feather to actually verbally fence with him, you'll get that operation. And that's the only one that's going to show anything. So sure enough, the next day, I went back, and it's a long drive from Cape Cod into Boston. I was at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and it was like an hour and a half ride, and this was in the winter, so it's even a little bit longer because Boston is known for its snowstorms and bad winter weather. And I got there, and I didn't call for an appointment beforehand. I just showed up. My doctor walked out into the waiting room where I was sitting, and he said, Kathy, what are you doing here? And I said, I've come back to talk to you. I really need to talk to you. So we went into his office, and I told him that I knew something was wrong, that I really needed for him to listen to me. And I again said, can you feel anything here? And he said, no. And I said, well, I want you to do exploratory surgery. And he was shocked. And he looked at me, and he said, I can't do exploratory surgery. It's against hospital policy without any symptoms, and it's against my policy. Surgery is serious. I have to put you under anesthesia. There are dangers involved. Infection could, you know, be a result. I can't just do exploratory surgery on you because you want it. Not without symptoms, not without a reason, not without something. And so I imagined holding this feather, and I pointed it at him in my mind, and I said, you need to listen to me. I wouldn't come here and be the pain that I've been, showing up on your doorstep without appointments over and over again if I didn't know something was wrong. I really need for you to listen to me. If I could perform this operation myself, I would, but I can't. I need you. Please help me. And he stood there for a second, and he looked at me. And all of a sudden, he said, okay. He threw up his hands, and he said, okay. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, did that just happen? There's no way. You know, is there some way to rewind that and listen to it again? And he said, I'll have the secretary schedule you for an MRI first so that we can see if there's anything there. And then I'll just go down over this area that you're sure something is wrong in, and we'll find out if anything's there. So to make a long story short, I went to the hospital. I was put under anesthesia. I went down that rabbit hole of darkness that anesthesia puts you in. You don't remember your dreams. You just kind of float around in nothingness. And all of a sudden, I heard his voice in my ear say, we got it, close her up. And I was so anxious, Nancy, that I literally pulled myself up out of that well of darkness. And I poked my head up over the side, and I turned it, and I looked at him, and I said, what was it? And the anesthesiologist came up over the top of my head, blocking off the light, and he said, did she just speak? And my doctor, everybody stopped. It was absolute silence in there, and all this tension. And my doctor said, Kathy, it's just what we thought it was. It's just a fibrotic tumor. Go back to sleep. And all I could see were eyes. You know, fuzzy eyes, because I was not fully awake. So the anesthesiologist gave me a lot more. I went right down that hole so fast. I don't remember dropping down there. It took me forever to wake up. I was so nauseous when I did. But I was lying there on the gurney, and my doctor came in, and he pulled the privacy curtain behind me, and the first warning bell went off. And then he came over and he took my hand, and the second warning bell went off, and all the flags started flapping, going, nothing, something's wrong, something's wrong. And my nausea was replaced with, you know, I was petrified. And I looked at him, and he said, pathology didn't like what they saw when they cut the tumor open. And I said, is it breast cancer? And he said, yes, it is. I'm going to have to refer you to a specialist now. I'm sorry. And when I was in there waving my imaginary feather in his face, and he said, well, okay, Kathy, we'll do it. I remember asking him, shouldn't we have an oncologist there? And he said, no, we don't need one. And I said, well, shouldn't an oncologist be doing the surgery? And he said, no, I'm going to do the surgery. Kathy, there's nothing there. You're too young for cancer. I can't feel anything, so I know it's not cancer. If it's anything, it's just a fibrotic tumor, and I'll just take it out. So now here I am in the recovery room going, woulda, coulda, shoulda. But I suddenly realized, you know what? When you're a patient and you're up against hospital policy and a doctor who's not believing you because he's believing these supposedly infallible scientific tests, what are you going to do? You know, well, you're lucky enough to get him to agree. How in the world am I now going to find an oncologist that's going to believe in me if he won't even refer me? You know, so I was just so happy to have anybody perform this surgery to find that I had cancer. And I was already in stage two, and it was in my lymph nodes.
Mm-hmm. See, a long time ago, I was a nurse, a licensed practical nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped the medical profession because I could not stand the treatment that was going on, all of the drugs that they were giving out to people without even knowing their history and not listening to the patient. I couldn't stand it. And I actually turned down a full-blown 100% to the penny scholarship to become a psychiatrist. I turned it down because I could never relate to their energy in the medical profession. So I turned it all down. So, you know, most people's questions probably have been for you, Kathleen. How could you, you know, get them to listen? How could you, you know, make it work? And my suggestion is for people, I don't care if you're a man or a woman, you go there and you roar loud enough that they cannot stop you until they do what you ask them. You're paying them to work on you. They're not paying you to come there. You know, so the profession needs to be changed, and the doctors cannot, and I will repeat this, cannot lump everybody into a group of this woman possibly has breast cancer, so she's in this group, or this woman is too young to have breast cancer, so we're not going to listen to her. She's just probably having some emotional fit. See, I couldn't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I argued with doctors all the time, and I mm-hmm. thought, no, I can't do that. I will find a better way to help people. And, of course, I did with my intuitive my counseling. But, you know, the same result happens for, you know, many, many people. People, I believe, Kathleen, just like yourself, know intuitively something is wrong with them. Now, whether they try to wipe it out of their mind logically because the doctor has said blah, 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 or if they follow it, really makes the difference. And you followed yours, and it made a difference.
Yes, it did. You're absolutely right. You know, I learned even after the second time that, you know, the second time I had the chiefs of everybody at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute following me, the chief of oncology, the chief of oncological surgery, the chief of radiology, all of them. And again, I had my mammograms done. And this time, the doctor, instead of having them done somewhere else, I had them done right there at the Dana-Farber where a radiologist would read them in front of me. And while he was reading them, this voice in my ear said, tell him to look over at the other film. And so I said to the doctor, what about this film over here? And he said, oh, that's not the one that had cancer. That's fine. Look at this one over here where you had the cancer. And I said, yeah, but what about this one over here? Are you looking at both of them? And he turned around and looked at me, and he said, Mrs. Canavis, you're healthy. Go home. And I said, but are you really sure? And he said, go home. So I ran downstairs to lower level 2 of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, which is down in where they do all the radiology. And I ran down there and I asked for the chief of radiology, and I said, I know something's wrong. He said, Kathy, the doctor upstairs just called me. I got off the phone from him, and he thinks that you're having an anxiety attack. And I said, I'm not having an anxiety attack. I know something's wrong. And he said, nothing's wrong. Go home. You're healthy. Rejoice that you're healthy. And he turned around and dismissed me. So I did. I went home, sat in the bathtub, and I cried and I cried and I cried because nobody was listening to me again. And this time I was with the chief. So what am I going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that night I have a dream. And in the dream, you're going to get a big kick out of this one, Nancy, you really are. In the dream, a pop-up comes through. My guides come out and get me in their little hooded, you know, brown sack for a robe outfits. They take me through the window, and standing inside the window is a female guide. But over her robe is a white doctor's gown. And on top of her head, and instead of the hood, is a little white hat. And instead of her little sandals are white clogs. And she's standing there holding these mammograms in her hand. And she points to the bottom of one, or one of the other guides does, and motions for me to move closer. And I look closer, and printed in big black block letters is my name. Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. So I know it's me. You know, there's no missing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I look closer, and then all of a sudden, poof, this guide turns into a clown, a really big, scary clown with curly red hair and a big red nose and big red shoes, and is rocking back and forth holding my mammograms. And I scream in my dream, oh, my God, this is a nightmare. Wake up, wake up. Well, as soon as I woke up, I got the dream. It's hard to miss that one. And I went back the next day without an appointment, and I showed up down in L2 with my chief of radiology there, and I told the secretary, I said, I want an MRI, and I want it now. And she must have pushed one of those panic buttons underneath, because sure enough, my doctor walked through, and he looks at me, and he goes, Kathy, why are you back? And I said, look, I'm not leaving without that MRI. I know something is wrong. I slept on it tonight. I feel worse about it today than I did yesterday. And I'm not leaving till I get the MRI. And he said, Kathy, we can't just give you an MRI because you want one. You have to have symptoms. Hospital policy dictates that you have to have symptoms. I said, look, mammograms didn't work the first time. Why in the world would you use them a second time to find something that they didn't even find the first time? I want an MRI, and I'm not leaving here without it. And he said, Kathy, we can't give it to you. I said, look, now I'm in the waiting room, and all these patients and their families are sitting there waiting. I said, I am going to lie down right here on your floor. I heard my husband back up against the wall. I said, I am going to kick my feet. I'm going to scream, and you're going to have to call security to drag me out of here by my feet, kicking and screaming, and I'm going to be on the 2 o'clock news. He just stood there and looked at me for a second and said, okay, go ahead and get her the MRI. And he said, I'll see you in a year, Kathy, and spun around and walked out the door. So the secretary's looking at me. You're going to really be upset when you hear this one, Nancy. It took me 4.5 months to get it, and I was in stage 4 by that time. 9 by 11 centimeter tumor. It was lobular, so it wasn't showing up in mammograms. Because, you know, lobular is like a liquid. And it doesn't really become a solid. It's what Elizabeth Edwards had. I think she was in stage 2, maybe early stage 3. And you don't really see it. You can't really feel it. You need to follow up patients where mammograms didn't work the first time. You have to use something else the second time. So that dream got me my results the second time. But, yeah, I was the squeaky wheel. I refused to say no. I refused to take no. I refused to be dismissed. And I threatened to throw a temper tantrum. And, hey, if that's what you've got to do to live, do it.
Well, yeah. I mean, people really, you know, they've got to stand up and be heard. If something is not feeling right, and granted, there are some people, of course, who want to be sick because of all the emotional needs that they have. But, you know, if something truly is not feeling right, then you really need to stand your ground, and you're not going to listen to them because, you know, I know everybody thinks, well, doctors have done all these studies and they must be these little gods. Well, I hate to inform people, but they are human just like you, and they make human error just like you. You know, so instead of thinking that you have to be wrong, that this little god doctor is right, don't do that to yourself. It's like real important that you just trust what you're feeling. People know. Just like you, Kathleen, people know when they've got something going on. But like I said, whether they're willing to admit it logically to themselves, you know, want to shove it under the door, or actually proceed is a whole different story, because then, you know, some people don't want to know that they have something, you know, so they'll hide it. But it's very, very important for all you listeners to understand that it is your right. You are paying that bill. It is your right to get your answers answered. And if they don't answer them, you have the right to continue to pursue it until you get an answer, whether you go to a different doctor or you, you know, stay there like Kathleen was going to do, lay down on the floor, throw a little tantrum, kicking your feet all over the place and screaming at the top of your lungs. Whatever it takes to get their attention truly is what you need to do. And I think people really, really need to understand that. I mean, like I said, I came from the medical field, but I couldn't stand what I saw. Because their idea is to have a pharmaceutical company come in and say, okay, we've tested this pill, and this is what this is for, so you need to give it out to your clients. And the doctors turn around who don't have enough time to test the medication and give it. And it's not going to be right for everybody, just like mammograms and other kinds of, you know, tests are not going to be suited for everybody. So you really have to know the ins and outs. So luckily, Kathleen, you followed your intuition, which I try to get people to understand is the most important thing you can ever listen to, no matter what. So, you know, I would think you would agree with that wholeheartedly at this point, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our bodies have been speaking to us, Nancy, since the beginning of time with signs and symbols. We have symptoms. When you're going to catch a cold, you know before you even have the actual cold symptoms, you're feeling tired. You're feeling your appetite wanes. Your head feels a little congested. There are signs and symbols there. You could go to a doctor at that point and say, you know what, I think I'm coming down with a cold, and he'd look at you and say, no, you don't have anything. Go home. But your body's already talking to you before anything can show up medically. And that's happening for a reason. You know, we need to listen to ourselves. We need to know things that are happening before they reach a point where there's no return. And that's especially true with our families. I mean, females have an intuition that's just uncanny. We know when somebody in our family is in trouble. We can feel it. We dream it. We see it. And, you know, we immediately start trying to get in touch with them to possibly change their course in order for them not to be injured or become ill. And for instance, when I was going through my treatment the first time, the doctors put me on tamoxifen. And they said, you know, this will keep you safe for the next 5 years so that you don't come down with another cancer. Well, what, I don't know, maybe they don't know it. Maybe, like you said, they don't know the type of medications that they're giving people. But tamoxifen has a history of not working after 2 years. Nobody told me that, and I kept telling my doctor, I kept feeling like I was getting cramps, PMS cramps. And he'd look at me and he'd say, well, are you menstruating? And I said, no. He said, well, then fine. Well, that was a sign that the tamoxifen had stopped working, and I told him the symptom. But because he didn't know the medicine, he didn't put two and two together. And so the second cancer I got 5 years later was hormone receptive. And he said to me, well, you know, we know that the tamoxifen stops working if you get another cancer. I said, are you kidding me? I said, that's what you're using as a measurement? I said, do you realize that the treatment's worse than the illness? You can die of the treatment quicker than the illness if you don't have some means by which to check the hormone levels in a woman's blood when you're taking blood tests every 6 months just to check her liver levels, then what good is the drug? You don't give a drug if you can't check to see if it's working. Not just if it's creating damage with other organs, but if it's actually working. And he said, well, we don't really have a test like that. I said, are you trying to tell me that with all these fertility clinics and all these tests that they have in these clinics to check hormone levels in women's blood, to see if they're ovulating or getting ready to menstruate or what their hormone levels are, you can't in some way hook into those and use those if you've got a woman on tamoxifen to be sure that this is working? And he just looked at me and said no. So I did my own research, and I think that you can actually go to CVS and get the kits to see if you are getting ready to go into menopause and take that test right after you've done all of your, you know, I did Adriamycin, Cytoxan, it burned all of my hormones out. Take that test then and continue to take it once every 6 months and see if there's a change. If there's a change, you take it back to your doctor and say, look, I'm seeing a change here and I'm having symptoms. What do you mm-hmm. think of that? Maybe I should go on to Arimidex now or something else because I think this has stopped working. But my point is, my other point is, patients need to go onto the internet, speak with survivors, speak with each other, and become an e-patient, an educated e-patient. Because at the end of the day, if I had been wrong, because people ask me this all the time, well, what if you had been wrong? What if your dreams had been wrong and you really were healthy? I said, you know what? If the doctors had laughed at me because I was freaking out, as they thought I was, and it turned out that I really was healthy, big deal. 2 days later, with their heavy schedules, they would have forgotten all about me and gone on about life like it never happened. But if I had been right and not pursued having them do a second test, and then they found that the cancer was so advanced that I died. Yeah, they might grieve with me for a little while or grieve over me, you know, for a little while. But then their heavy schedules would kick in, and they would forget about me in a couple of days, and life would go on as normal. So I would much rather take a chance on having them laugh at me and live than cry with me while I die.
Yeah, which is true. And again, I mean, people are afraid that they're going to be told you're foolish, you know, you're silly, and not just by a doctor, but even by relatives, because a lot of people look very, very healthy. And for all practical purposes, they basically are, except for that one part. And what people don't really understand, Kathleen, and I don't know, I mean, I've done tons of research on it because I was very curious about everything, but people can go to a website, it's called Natural News, naturalnews.com. And if you just put in the search bar cancer, it comes up with tons and tons and tons of information, different kinds of tests that have been done, even as far back as 1934, that shows that there's cures. And then there was another one that was a big one, but hidden from the public in 1976. And it's about, it's a tree that, it's like a, I think it's called Gravola tree, and its stems and its leaves and all of that have a lot of medicinal purposes, but doctors don't know about it. And, of course, pharmaceutical companies do not want you to know about it because they will not make the money that they are making by giving you these drugs that are basically killing you and making you a lot sicker, like you've said, Kathleen, than what the real, you know, is going on. You know, but you can go and you can look up all of these facts. They're not hidden, but you got to look. So that means people, you can't be lazy. Mm-hmm. And I know everybody's worried about their money and all kinds of stuff. But to me, if you don't have your health, I don't care how rich you are, it isn't going to work. So take the time, go on the internet, like Kathleen is saying, look up all these different cancer information that is out there, because there is a lot. You know, this, I think it's called, it's G, like George, R-A-V-I-O-L-A, tree. It has been shown that it actually helps prostate cancer, breast cancer. It also helps lung cancer and pancreatic cancer. And it does 10,000 times better work than any drug that's out there. Plus, when you're given chemo and radiation, it's not selective. It kills everything, including the healthy ones. This particular plant actually only attacks the cancer-causing cells. So people need to look it up because the info is there, but you got to look. You know, you got to look. You know, and if they go to Natural News and look up cancer, there's different things there. And one of the biggest statements that, you know, I took up on, because I totally believe this, it says that everyone has cancer cells in their body. Mm-hmm. These cells don't show up until they're multiplied to several billion and usually happen after years of abuse due to diet or stress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, and I'm not saying that that's every cause, but I totally believe that when you are born with every single known sickness, virus, and disease of mankind. And depending on what you do to your body and how you do it and try to keep it nice and safe and stuff, will actually allow the disease. And if you break down disease, it says dis-ease, means your emotions are somewhere where they shouldn't be, your stress level is too high, or something is going on that's actually creating that. But I believe that if people can just start taking better care of themselves, especially with diet, I mean, we have all these fast foods, we microwave everything, and we use plastic galore, and it has all kinds of toxicities in it that people, first of all, probably don't know about because they've never been told. But if they just research it, they would find out. And all of these things adding to your body actually breaks down your own immune system, which creates the dis-ease to happen in you. You know, so, I mean, there's many, many things out there, Kathleen, that people can find and research just like you did, you know, just like I've done. And it's not hard. I mean, you just put in the word cancer and you have thousands of pages of stuff, you know. Now, you're also writing a book, but it's not out yet. So let's give them the title of your book, when you think it's going to be out, and then let's talk about what your book talks about.
Well, the name of the book is Surviving Cancerland, because the whole time you're going through this, you feel like Alice in Wonderland. You know, they hand you a pill. They have no idea what's going to happen when you take it. You know, will you shrink? Will you implode? Will you disappear? You know, they don't know. And it almost feels like you're talking to people who are March hares and white rabbits. So I named the book Surviving Cancerland, The Psychic Aspects of Healing. And when I used the word psychic, I didn't really mean someone who looks in a crystal ball. I meant psychic from the mind, from the psyche, your inner voices, your dreams, your brain, using those inner parts and workings of you that can keep you healthy. My book right now is in a number of publishing houses. The last time I talked with my agent, who was Jack Scoville of Scoville, Gallen & Goshen, New York, he said I think there were 9. He sent me a list. And they've had the book for almost a year. They're very interested in it. Unfortunately, we're in a very bad economy, and the publishing companies are feeling the same pinch that everybody else is, and they're reluctant to publish an author who has no publishing credits to their name, which I don't. I never wanted to be a writer. That was never my goal in life. I, you know, actually when I was little, I wanted to be a Playboy bunny. But, you know, after 2 rounds with breast cancer, that's out the window. Surviving Cancerland, The Psychic Aspects of Healing. And you can go onto Facebook and find it. But you can also go to my website, which is www.survivingcancerland.com, and there are 2 Twitter and 2 Facebook links there. You can click on either of those and follow me to my pages. Actually, my profile page on Facebook filled up immediately. I had my 5,000 limit in no time flat. So I opened up a second no limit page, and that's Facebook page 2 on my website. So if you click on that, you can go to my second page, which is almost at 1,000, hasn't been open very long. So join me there, and I post everything that I'm doing on there, my radio shows. It's a great page, very interesting, has a lot of resources that people can go to, and look forward to seeing everybody there.
Now, do you go out, Kathleen, and do speaking engagements?
I do. I do speaking engagements for cancer centers and cancer groups. The last one I did down in Florida was full of doctors, and believe it or not, I was a little nervous about that because I could just see them going, oh boy, this one, somebody call the wagon to come cart her off. We need to put her in a padded cell. But actually, afterward, they came up and they said, you know, you were extremely convincing. I don't know if that was good or bad, but they said, you know, we'd really like to know more about that. And when your book comes out, would you please give us a copy or send us a copy or tell us how to get it? We'd like to know more about that because, you see, my guided prophetic dreams were proved by their science. their second level of science. So I kept saying to the doctors, prove me wrong. And when they tried to prove me wrong, they actually proved me right. So it wasn't just, you know, an airy type of story. It has the scientific medical facts that they can believe in, that I can prove, because, see, I have all the paperwork. I have to have the paperwork to prove that all of this is right if it goes to a big publishing house, because they don't want to get sued because I made something up. Nothing I said in that book is made up, and I have all the paperwork to back it up, including mammograms. I mean, I have my mammogram that with the paperwork saying she's healthy, and then I have a pathology report 2 months later that says she's in stage 2 with it in her lymph nodes. So, you know, it's indisputable evidence.
Mm-hmm. And that's real important, because a lot of people, again, Kathleen, they're afraid that they're going to be made to look foolish. And if they keep the paper trail and they keep all the information, chances are at least 9 times out of 10 that your facts and what you have are going to be shown to be true. And then, of course, nobody can really go, oh, man, this person's really whacked or crazy or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, so keeping the paper trail is real, real important. On your website, there is a comment that I want to read it. And it says, do you know? And it says, more than 10 million Americans are currently living with or through cancer. Global cancer rates could increase by 50% to 15 million by 2020. Why do you think, Kathleen, that this rate of cancer is going to continue to grow like it has? Do you think it's because people are just assuming doctors are right and there's nothing else they can do with it? Or lack of information? What do you think is going to make it happen like that?
I think stress. Stress is a killer. And I got, you know, when a radio host sent me an email and said, you know, I'd like to have you on my show, but I'm not, if you got cancer twice, I'm not sure that you understand how you got it, why you got it, or learned from it. I thought that was cute. I really applauded her, you know, her statement there, and I sent her back an email, and I said, I did. I do know why I got it. I got it on a physical level, and I got it on a spiritual level. On the physical level, I did not handle stress well. My mother was dying of colon cancer. She died 6 months before I was diagnosed. I was the caregiver. Caregivers have a 25% higher chance of coming down with a severe illness after they've cared for a loved one who dies. And one of the things that I had to learn, and I did learn it because my father just died Christmas Day last year from being sprayed with Agent Orange in Vietnam 30 years ago. Took this long to kill him. And I didn't have the meltdown. I was okay with it because I learned an important lesson. You can't walk somebody else's journey. Death is an important part of life. Death is not an enemy. We all must die. It's not that we should be afraid of dying. It's that we should want to live to continue our journey, and only we can walk our journey. We cannot carry other people's baggage without you know, picking it up, and you don't try to walk on other people's paths. We're only responsible for our garbage and our path. And when you load yourself down and start trying to run up two different paths at the same time, you're going to have an accident. And so I learned that. I meet people who try to, you know, package up their garbage in these beautiful ribbons and hand it off, and I'll just put my hands behind my back and say thank you, but no. You know, I don't want to take that away from you. It looks very special. You know, you want to be very nice about it, but you don't want to pick it up. And you can't walk their path. You can hold their hand at certain spots where your paths may intersect. But you have your own path to walk. And that brought me to the second thing that I learned on a spiritual level. We all come down here with a game plan. We all have that game plan before we're ever born. And through dreams, we connect with the other side. We connect with our family from previous lives, our friends from all eternity, because we're spirits. We don't die. The body dies. The spirit lives on. And so when we come down here with our game plan, we say, okay, those of you on the other side who truly do love us, you have to come and let me know when I'm getting off of the path. And so I remember after I was diagnosed the second time, I had this dream and my guide showed up. It was right afterwards. And I got to be perfectly honest with you, Nancy, I was pissed.
I'm sure.
I was not a happy camper. And I looked at the guide and I said, why? Why do I have this again? And why did I even have it the first time? I mean, please, tell me. I don't want any more dreams, and I don't want any more advice. Just answer that question. And my guide just kind of looked at me, and he said, you decided to do this before you ever came down here. You wanted to come down and come down with cancer during a time when doctors were no longer believing in God. They're only believing in what they can see, which is science. And spirituality is being kicked to the back of the room in favor of what we can hold only in our hand and measure. You came back to help people reconnect with their inner selves through your journey. You told us you wanted to do this. We told you we would be with you every step of the way, and here we are. And I looked at them in the dream, and I said, what in the world was I smoking up there when I said And they started laughing, and they said, nothing. And so after I finished my second treatment, I had another really, really important dream. I had a number of dreams, but this was an important one, and I didn't even realize it till I was rereading some chapters in my second book, because I'm finishing the second book up, which is Surviving Recurrence in Cancer Land, Pearls of Wisdom. And in that dream, I was walking around the halls of a hospital in, you know, my little, those cute little gowns that they give you that are open in the back so you can flash the world. And I had my IV bag in my hand and the needle, and I saw my guide, and I walked over to my guide and I said, you know, I just have such a terrible time trying to get these IVs in, but I think it's about time now, isn't it? It was like at the four-year period. And I handed him the bag, and he looked at me, and this trash can appeared in front of him, and he pushed the pedal on the trash can, the top opened, and he dropped the bag in it, and the dream ended.
Cool.
So that was a wonderful dream for me. It was like, get over this patient mentality. You are never and never were a patient. You were a person on a journey, and you finished it. You finished that part of it, and now my journey is helping other people learn what I learned. Maybe not make the same mistakes, or if you do make the same mistakes, maybe not as badly, because let's face it, we learn from our mistakes more than we learn from the happy, warm fuzzies that we get in life. We all forget those wonderful dreams we have, but who can forget a nightmare? I mean, that's just a cold prickly that sticks in your brain forever until you solve it. So, yeah, you know, I think stress is a very big reason that so many people are coming down with cancer, because of the disconnect with the other side, where there are so many family members that are there to help us. And we have to perceive the stress differently. Stress is a matter of perception. One person's stress is another person's, oh, well, it is what it is, and moves on. They don't stay stuck in it. As having a family member die, yes, you go through the all of the levels of grieving, and you move on. You don't fixate on it. Financial problems, do you have enough to get by until the next day? Then don't stress over it. You know, if you can't give your children the video games they want, the brand new computers that they want, all of the other so expensive things that they want, let them become reacquainted with their imagination, which is something that we're losing on a daily basis because everything is spoon-fed to them with electronic games. They don't even interact with each other anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, address your stress level. Take a look at it. Write down the things that you feel are the most stress-producing, and then laugh at them. I mean, laughter is like the medicine that chases away the boogeyman. Just laugh at them and trust in the fact that your guides are going to guide you through these stresses. You're going to come out the other side of this storm cloud, and it's going to be a beautiful sunny day, because we always do in the end.
Well, we do. And but you're right, Kathleen. People are very, very much disconnected. And you can just look around the world and you can see it. I mean, with all of the greed that people are in, the power struggles, you know, the lies that's going on, the finances. I mean, the entire world has been disconnected. And one of my things, I try to get people to understand that we need to learn how to love first ourselves, because a lot of people really don't like themselves. And then we can learn to love each other again, because what I, you know, I tell people that the progress that everybody thinks we're in, to me, it's very much deprogress, because we've lost that connection, you know, from self to self-love to the all-powerful, and it needs to come back, you know. And when people start to wake up and start remembering who they are, really, not what they look like, not how big their boobs have to be from a boob job or any of that stuff, but who they are inside, that's what's going to help heal the world. You know, not all this other stuff that they keep telling us about. I have a problem with all the drugs. I really have a problem with this country being the biggest pill-popping nation in the world. Mm-hmm. And it is. You know, to me, there are many other ways that people can heal themselves, and it's not through a pill, because it's just a Band-Aid. You know, and the one medicine that you were on, I'll tell you, when I was with my boyfriend, he ended up having lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they took out on his right side 2/3 of his lung, you know, because it was like right on the borderline between the middle lobe and the lower lobe. So they had to take both because they wanted to be safe. And he's okay as far as I know today. I mean, we don't really talk. But, you know, he had a dream. And he knows what I do and how I use my intuition all the time to help people, you know, try to help with their life, to try to get their life straight. He said to me one day, he said, "Nancy, I had this dream." I go, "Really? What kind of dream did you have?" He said, "You know, I dreamt this angel. This angel came to me." And I said, "Well, good. Let's hear it." He said, "Well, the angel came to me and basically told me that I was going to be okay." I said, "How'd you feel about that?" He goes, "Well, in the dream, it felt really okay." I said, "So now that you're awake, how do you feel about that dream?" He goes, "Well, I'm hoping it could be true." I said, "Well, hoping?" I said, "You need to know that it's true. Because when they come with dreams like that, they don't lie to you. They're trying to guide you. They're trying to help you. So you need to know that it's okay. Not that you hope it's okay, but you know it's okay." So, you know, that was about all the things he ever said to me as far as intuition, because he was like, yeah, right, Nancy. So I would just let him do his thing. But like I said, as far as I know, it's been 5 years, I think, that he's supposed to be cancer-free. You know, so it is important, Kathleen, that people understand that their dreams are there to help them. Their guides are there to help them. They have to open themselves up and allow it, because we're so stuck. Well, not me, but most people are so stuck with, you know, how much money they have to make, how they're going to make ends meet, rather than knowing, like you said, if you have enough for today, live for today, and the rest will actually take care of itself. You know, I mean, you come up with a lot of really good, interesting facts, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, is that possible?
Oh, yes, of course. I also write for Cape Women Online Magazine. You can pull it up on Google. I have the cancer Q&A column. So if you wanted to send me a question, I will, and you put your email on it. If you email me at catcan@comcast.net, I will email you back immediately with an answer. And then without using your last name or where you are, I will use it in the column, Cape Women Online Magazine cancer column, to help other women who may have the same question but are either afraid to ask it or don't realize that they can. Anyhow, your questions would actually help someone else, and that's what it's all about right now, is helping each other. So, again, you can get a hold of me either on Twitter, you can tweet me or send me a direct message on Twitter, or you can go onto my Facebook page, the Surviving Cancerland page. Ask me the question there. I'll answer you immediately. Or you can go to my email, catcan@comcast.net, or go right to Cape Women Online Magazine and ask me a question there. I will always answer you. If I don't have the answer, I'll find it or show you how to find it or tell you where to go to find it. But an interesting thing that you were saying, Nancy, was the fact that your boyfriend had this dream from an angel. We spend all this time praying, please, God, give me an answer to this, an answer to that, or do this for me, or do that for me. And when he gives us an answer, we don't believe it. I mean, what kind of a slap in the face is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It is.
When you ask for an answer, you don't even have to watch for it. It will be in your face. The only thing you really need to do is believe. Because
mm-hmm.
if you stop, if you continually go, well, that can't be real, that can't be real, he can't possibly be talking to me, he'll never stop talking. But you'll get farther and farther and farther away from him to the point where you're not going to hear the answer. You're not going to see it. You're not going to believe it. And we need to stay connected, and our angels, our guides, are our connection. And another thing, dealing with stress, you know, women are the universal caregivers. I mean, that's just a given. We,
mm-hmm.
you know, carry the babies. You know, I think if men had to go through just having, you know, a period every month, there'd be nobody else left on the planet, let alone going through labor. That'd be it. It'd be all over but the shout. But, you know, we take care of those children. We take care of our family. And unfortunately, what happens is when you constantly just give and never step back and say, you know, I've given, now I expect something, and teach them to give in return, you find that the well eventually becomes empty, and even you can't get that needed drink of water. So I think as women, it's really, really important that we do give and we do take care, and we'll always be taking care of a little more than everybody else, but that we step back and allow others to return that care. And if they're not returning it, ask them to return it. And if they can't return it, hey, move on. You know, you're throwing pearls before the swine there. Just move on.
Which is true. One of the things I use when I'm talking with women, you know, and I'm trying to help them try to figure out kind of what's going on, one of the scenarios that I use is this. You know, when you're on an airplane and they make that announcement, that safety, when those masks fall down, you put it on yourself first
mm-hmm.
before you put it on somebody else. And then I ask them, why do you think they tell you that? And do you know, Kathleen, that probably 90% of the people, man or woman, that I ask that to cannot answer that question. They cannot answer that question. And it's like, well, here's the fact, folks. If you can't breathe and you're trying to help somebody else breathe, guess who's going to be the one who faints and probably dies?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So
or if you faint and die, you can't help the others either.
No, you know, and they go, oh, you know, it's kind of like that little light comes on. You know, so just every time, man and woman, when you're out there giving and giving and giving, I'm not saying don't give. There is a point of giving. There is a limit to giving. So set your boundaries, and when you're having a hard time setting those boundaries, you put that airplane scenario in your head, and you repeat that to yourself over and over again until you get it. Yes, people are going to get upset because, yeah, you're supposed to do all this for them, but trust me, in the long run, you'll be able to do more for them because you're actually getting your energy back. It's not just being given out. It doesn't mean you love anybody less or you care for them less. It just means you've got to give to yourself first sometimes in order to maintain that energy level so you can then continue to give and give. Now, Kathleen, we have about 1 minute left, so I want you to repeat your website again, the name of your book that's coming out, and any quick information that you can give out to the listeners, please.
Thanks, Nancy. My book is Surviving Cancerland, The Psychic Aspects of Healing. Because it's not yet published, the title may end up getting changed a little bit, hopefully not much. But just stay in contact with me on my Facebook pages and my Twitter pages, and you'll know everything that happens the moment it happens, because I'll put it right up there. You can get a hold of me from my website, which is www.survivingcancerland.com, SURVIVINGCANCERLAND, survivingcancerland.com. You can also Google me, Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas. I kept my maiden name as my middle name because when I put this book out, I'm going to put myself right in the front and say, I'm not hiding behind a pen name. This is me. If you want to take shots of me, go ahead. I can handle it. I'm a big girl. I had to pull on my big girl panties for the second time I went through this, and give me your best shot. So I'm putting my real name out there so that people who knew me even when I was small can say, oh, my gosh, you know, this girl really does exist, and so this story is probably very true. That's about it. Go onto my website, find my two Twitter pages, my two Facebook pages. Click on the second Facebook page because the first one's full.
Yeah. Kathleen, it's been great having you on the show. And I'll get, you know, all this information out to my people, too. It's very, very important that people understand that there's always hope and there's always things that can be done before it's too late. So thank you for taking the time being on the show, and thank you for being open enough to talk about all of it.
Thank you, Nancy. I really enjoyed myself, and I think we helped a lot of people. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. Go to her website, go to her blog pages, her Twitter, Facebook, all of them, and just stay updated. You'd be surprised what's going to be on there. So may God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care. Bye now.
Good night.